Hello and welcome back. Round your city, round the clock. Everybody needs you. It is Relatively Football on the Sunday night full-time whistle review podcast. I'm here in the United States of America, sadly not with my sister in these times, but she is with me on Zoom and we're going to talk about women's football. Flo, good evening, good night. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I feel like we need to trademark some kind of title or brand that we call this Sunday Night Sesh, like on
Sunday
the whistle,
Night Sesh.
Reflections and boo, and then some kind of sound effects and I don't know.
As you can tell, listener, the brand is still coming together. let's get right down to the games flow. We'll keep it nice and swift. Before we get to the games flow, look, listener, sometimes maybe you do this. You know we do this. We always have a lot of screens on us on a Sunday, on a Wednesday, whenever the games are. Flo went to the extreme today. She takes her work very seriously. She had three games, every WSL game money could buy, and she had Jurassic Park 2 playing at the same time. Flo, tell the listener, how do you do it? What is your secret?
I'm a slave to the culture. Well, I didn't really have a secret because problem with FA Player not on your laptop is you can't rewind. So I actually missed all of Arsenal's goals in real time. I obviously, the first half, no goals. Second half, flurry of goals. And I was mid making a pizza, like making it from scratch. I hadn't done the dough. My boyfriend done the dough. So I was kind of putting my pizza together, if you like, putting it in the oven. And in the space of that time, you know, doing the assembling of the pizza work, I missed all the bloody goals. So,
not a mention of Jurassic Park 2 then. No, it wasn't Raptor related.
Oh, Jurassic Park 2 was good. It took me a while to
remember. Sorry, that's what I meant.
Jurassic Park 2 is strange because it's like the same as Jurassic Park 1, but also really different at the same time. It's got an all-star cast. Julianne Moore, random. A very young Vince Vaughn, also quite random. Yeah, it's just that guy, British actor that died a couple of years ago, I can't remember his name.
Pete Postlethwaite.
Yes, he's legend. In it. It's just a real, and it, the storyline, I just, yeah, I'm not sure about that. But alongside the WSL games, it was a perfect accompaniment to a Sunday.
I'm sure some of the WSL games were even more experimental than that.
Yeah.
That Steven Spielberg.
Well, I'll tell you what,
sequel.
Based on a lot of the first halves of the WSL games, bar maybe the Spurs game, Jurassic Park was a bit more entertaining, actually. And then
And
then the second halves were completely different. And then I really had to really not focus on Jurassic Park 2 and what the hell Julianne Moore was getting herself into.
I think dinosaurs or no dinosaurs, Spurs-Everton was one of the best matches we've seen.
No, that's
season.
What I'm saying. Spurs-Everton was good. The other two took a while to get going.
Start to finish. We've already mentioned it, so we'll go on down to the West Midlands and get talking about Villa-Arsenal first. Aston Villa, 0. Arsenal, 4. As Flo alluded to, it was 0-0 at halftime in a very spirited display from Villa. They looked really energetic early on. That kind of bizarre 6, kind of 2-2 formation we were talking about. That doesn't... Yeah, 6-2-2 with the kind of Iwabuchi holding things up, amazing footwork, and then so many players back crowded the block for the block in the box. It looked like it was going to work for a bit, Flo, but Arsenal, when they get going, they do look really, really good.
Yeah, I thought Villa defended really well in the first half, and it's not really like much changed. I just think Arsenal found the spaces a bit better in the second half, and perhaps it was just tiredness from Villa trying to kind of keep Arsenal at bay for so long. I mean, Lisa Weiss made some good saves in the first half, so Arsenal did have a lot of the ball, a lot of the possession, as you would expect. But I guess there's only so long you can kind of keep your resistance up against a team that's going to create so many chances. But Arsenal looked like this, you know, this word that has escaped Joe Montemurro's team for so long that he's been looking for, searching for that rhythm. They certainly had it today. They were passing the ball around really quickly. You could see with Jordan Nobbs coming back, difference
yeah,
that
that's
made.
A big, big
especially.
Fitness.
And yeah, they just looked really in sync and yeah, really, really, really good as a team.
I thought it was a great spectacle first half, and there was a moment kind of between the start of the second half and about the whenever right before Miedema's goal, the opener, which kind of once the dam had burst, Villa were well beaten. But there was a moment where Danielle van der Donk missed a sitter. I don't know if you saw that. She hit it over the bar, and she turned round and her face just made you think, oh God, it's happening again.
When yeah.
And it was interesting because I was almost writing the post-match in my head when she missed that. And then Alicia Endow goes down the other end, the Villa centre-back on some bizarre mazy run, and hits a really good chance, but 18 yards out over the bar. And it almost, for me, was a completely different game there if Endow had scored that, and you just felt some nerves sapping in. But, you know, we've talked about Miedemar not turning up in the big games, but I think if you can turn up and be the difference, get breaking the deadlock in a game like this, that's, you know, this is a big game for Arsenal, with a lot still on the line in regards to Champions League positions. On Champions League positions, Flo, we've had a question from the wonderful Mia Eriksson. He's a really good follow on Twitter. Great photographer, really knows their footy. Asking if Arsenal will make the Champions League. So I'm going to ask you for your opinion on that matter.
It's tough, but I think... it depends what happens to United, to be honest. It does. I think over the last couple of weeks, at the same point as which Arsenal have shown frailties, depleted squad, injuries issue, confidence issues, this was exactly the sort of result they needed to get back into the hunt for Champions League. It'd be interesting to see what happens when United get back into action and how the last few weeks have impacted them. International break might have helped them. International break might have hindered them. It's hard to know. But I'm going to say no. But the thing is, as United being the new kids on the block, I feel like it's more likely that United will miss out. But the gap is still quite big. So, yeah, I'm going to say no. Sorry, I just kind of came around to the same conclusion, but I'm going to say no.
Gap right now is 6 points. Arsenal have a game in hand, so it could be 3 points, and they still have to play each other. So that's why, you know, looking at Montemurro's comments after the match, it is still in Arsenal's hands if they can take care of business and beat Man United. So lots to check out there. I might agree with my sister on this one and double up, and I think United will squeeze it out. I think it just feels like Casey Stoney has done enough already. I know,
yeah.
You know, she just needs that draw against Arsenal and to kind of close out the season. And I just believe Casey Stoney will get this right. I really believe in her kind of management and her coaching. And I think she'll see it out. Moving on to the other more one-sided game before we get to the game of the day, Everton versus Spurs. Flo, St. George's Park had to host Birmingham after more pitch issues in the WSL. And another kind of spirited defensive display from Carlo Ward's Blues. But apart from that, really, once you get mentally beat, once that first goal goes in, it all kind of goes pear-shaped very quickly. Two goals from a returning Sam Mewis and a couple more from Hemp and Caroline Weir made it another 4-0 win for Man City. And they are keeping the chase on at Chelsea at the top.
Yeah, it's frustrating because really good first half. And I think Carlo Ward would be really happy, really, really happy to go in 0-0 because, yeah, City created a lot of opportunities in that first half, but Hannah Hampton always looked quite comfortable in the saves that she was making. You know, they weren't like chasing, diving saves, trying to get to the top right-hand corner. You know, she looked comfortable. The defence looked fairly solid. So it was so frustrating to concede that goal, and I think it was 40th minute.
Yeah,
and to
right
lose,
before half-time.
Yeah, to lose everything you'd kind of worked for in that first half. And a bit like the Arsenal game, yeah, once the floodgates open against City, it's a bit of a free-for-all and it's really hard to contain that and limit the damage. But given two teams have conceded 7 against City this season, that is not a fair, that's not a bad result. Birmingham up against a lot with the pitch and everything else going on with injuries this season. And what happened with the players that broke the COVID rules and had a party. That, you know, there's been issues within the squad. And it was, yeah, but before the match, it was all kind of more of that chaos for Carlo Ward to deal with, which she deals with so well. You know, she's managed all these really difficult scenarios so well because they're the kind of things that could really uproot any side. I mean, look what the impact Dubai seemingly had on Arsenal. But, yeah, like the days before the game, the FA announced that Solihull Moors' stadiums wasn't meeting the FA rule and regulations requirements. And Carla Ward said in her pre-match press conference that she had no idea about this and she doesn't know why it's not meeting the standards because Solihull had played Torquay United on Tuesday or Wednesday. So how is it, you know, fitting National League standards but not the FA standards? So I think it's a bit frustrating, but I mean, it's great that they managed to get the game to go ahead. And I imagine that Birmingham's board were willing to pay the £500 this time that they weren't willing to pay before. But yeah, disappointing not to be able to play at home. And hopefully they're not going to play out the rest of their, you know, their home matches there, because in their eyes, Solihull Moors' pitch is fine. And I think there's just a lack of communication once again. But, you know, it's City, 4-0, could have been worse, could have been better. Probably, you know, 39 minutes in, they might have been thinking that they might get a point out of that. But City, just so many good players, such an elite squad. You're really up against it with everything else Birmingham are going through, so...
Don't have the full season numbers in front of me, but 17% possession for Birmingham does sound like a record low this season for any team in the league. So already just the physical task, the mental task of having to defend and watch City create that many chances. Although they only had 12 shots on goal, and like you said, Hampton looked really good. I think the other takeaway for me is just Sam Mew's headers are, as the kids say, a cheat code.
Yeah, and you know, this is her first game back since being injured and being away with the US team in the previous camp. So, you know, she made a huge difference today. City were already smashing them in without her, but she did, you know, she made her presence felt very quickly again. So she's hard to deal with.
Yeah, I think that was the other thing. To see her come back in so seamlessly was a sign that they're really ready to go all the way in this league, chasing Chelsea as well as in the Champions League. I think just great to have Sam Mewis back. To the game of the day, Flo, this one really took our breath away. Spurs finishing 2-3 at home at the Hive Stadium. They were 2-0 down very early on after two semi-questionable penalties that Valérie Govan beautifully struck away, cool as ice, sending one to the right and one to the left. Mikkelsen and goal had absolutely no chance. Valérie Govan always one step ahead of her. And then Spurs come back, Flo. I was texting you during the game thinking this could never happen. I just did not think. I thought Spurs had one goal in them, but I thought two goals was beyond them. And there they were. They pulled it all the way back. And then, you know, just they only had the draw for 4 minutes before Jill Scott scores the winner, her first goal back in Everton colours. Huge win for Willie Kirk, who I think has been having a bit of pressure there. And maybe, you know, some respect for Spurs, who showed a bit of fight.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you and I both lucked out because we ended up choosing this as, I guess, our main game, the one that we sort of had comms on, so we weren't too overloaded. And yeah, really came up trumps. I thought after that initial two-goal lead, yeah, I did think it was only really going one direction.
I thought it was over, yeah.
Yeah, they were such early goals as well. And debate about the penalties, yes, perhaps a little bit harsh. On the first one, you know, her hands are already in that position, so she's not moving her hands up, but she does sort of like palm the ball. Like she almost pushes the ball away with her hands, like a netball pass.
I watched it back 6 times. I'd screen recorded it. Listener, that's one of the best ways to try and get the bad replays to work on FA Player. I watched it back 6 times, could not tell if it was a handball from that camera angle.
I rewound it and I thought her arms were up. Obviously, it's a podcast, you can't really see. Her arms were up to her chest already. The ball is played towards her and it goes straight directly into her hands like that. But she almost pushes her hands away.
Feel like it hits her chest first. I think it gets hit into her chest.
Yeah, I mean, we'd never have a good enough view.
I think the angle's really hard.
You'd have to have a really big close up. But the referee's standing right there in front of it. So.
Right. Well, and I think the giveaway is Harrop.
A good view.
On the first penalty, doesn't really complain. That's my thing, is that I think you can tell from the Spurs players' reactions that I think the penalty was probably justified on the first one. Look, don't get me wrong, there's
they don't protest a lot on that first one.
Well, but then they protest the second one. And I think the second one is...
The second one is stupid.
It's
the second
tough.
One, I will just say stupid, because Kerry Sarrett gave away a penalty against Chelsea for handball. Yeah, naive as well, probably. But this one I thought was really naive from a player that's extremely experienced. She should not be doing things like that. She is tussling with who was the Everton player that won the penalty? Is it Jill? It wasn't Jill Scott, was it? Was it Turner?
No, it's not Jill Scott.
Dan Turner. Anyway.
It could be Sivecki.
She's tussling with the Everton player. And the Everton player gestures straight to the referee and says, like, look what she's doing to me. She's pulling me back. She's holding me back, right? So Harrop should acknowledge in that moment, well, the referee's got her attention, right? The referee is watching me. So what I should not do now at this point is make obvious contact with the player and bring her down. Like, you just don't do that, because the referee, you know, a lot of the time the referees miss things like this in the box because they're focusing on so many different players. They might be looking at the goalie and seeing if there's pressure on the goalie and the goalie can't get to the ball, or they might be looking at the corner or whatever. You know, they might be distracted or looking at different players. But Harrop must know that all eyes are on her there at that moment, because the Everton player she's jostling with has got the ref's attention. And then what does she do? She visibly, maybe not with a lot of force, but she visibly puts her hand on her and pushes her down and out the way. Now, probably would have taken a lot more to put the Everton player on the floor, but she does it right in front of the referee while the referee's watching. I just think it's a really naive and stupid thing to do.
I love this goal because, or this penalty decision, because it reminded me of us as kids. You know, when like you're bothering each other and you're like pinching the other person or just like giving them like a little slap or something, and then mum doesn't see, but then you're like, mum look, like she's doing
yeah,
it
exactly.
and then she turns around right as you're giving someone a smack or a pinch,
and that sibling is the one that gets in more trouble because their incident was witnessed. And that's exactly what Kerry Tarrop did. She just
doesn't matter if she started it,
exactly, she played into the hands of what the Everton player was doing. She got completely played. And someone of her experience who's played at the top of women's football for, I think she was at Birmingham for 10 years or something like that before she moved to Spurs, should not be doing something like that. And I think I'm yet to see signs of why she's such a fantastic defender since she moved to Spurs.
Wow, that's a burn. I don't know if I agree with that. Hashtag refs are mum. Couple of big things on this game, Flo. Like I say, great spectacle. There was a really amazing moment when it was still 0-0 early on. And actually, I thought Spurs started this game pretty well beyond a kind of Harrippian fall down in the box. There was a moment where Izzy Christiansen had whose delivery is really on the money this season. Really great delivery from crosses and corners. She had a corner come in and Spurs counterattacked so fiercely, and Kit Graham was beating players. And I just think you saw a little bit of fire and counterattacking football from Spurs today, especially for Addison's first goal, really showing a lot of temper, a lot of beef. We loved how quickly they got the turnover. Kit Graham gets the turnover and then plays in Addison so quick to get that touch for the goal. And I think you really see Rianne Skinner's kind of getting a tune out of, at least kind of mentally, these Spurs players. I think that deserves a mention.
Yeah, I mean, they showed a massive amount of character to come back from 2-0 down and get themselves, you know, close to getting a point after looking dead and buried. I also think great to see Gemma Davison score a goal like she did today. We haven't really seen any flashes or signs from her at all since she joined Spurs of the skill and the talent that...
First goal of the season.
Yeah, I mean, she hasn't really played that much this season, but I think she got maybe one goal last year. She hasn't got a lot of goals in Spurs colours at all. And, you know, she's a big player in the history of WSL. Tremendous talent, bags of skill, but we haven't quite seen that. She's been in and out of injury since joining Spurs, and she wasn't even supposed to be in the squad today. It was supposed to be Cho, and Cho got injured, I think, in the warm-up or, you know, injured in the morning or whatever, so ended up not suiting up. So Gemma Davison got a spot on the bench, came on, and that sort of game-changing ability and skill and finish is the sort of player that she is. And I think it's great to finally see her maybe reaching those levels again after being a bit off the last couple of years. So I really enjoyed that, because that was a fantastic solo goal. Fantastic solo goal.
Last couple of things I want to say about this game was it reminded me so much of Spurs-Everton last year. It was so funny when it got back to 2-2 and Everton had the 2-0 lead, because this is almost an exact mirror image of this game last year, where Everton threw away a two-goal lead and Emma Mitchell curled in a free kick for Spurs and got them a point at home. And so I think for Willie going on, you know, I thought Spurs showed great mentality and Rianne Skinner deserves a lot of credit, but Willie Kirk deserves a lot of credit, because Everton had been through this exact game last season and dropped points and showed a weakness and kind of shown that they're in this kind of Bermuda Triangle of the table where they're not a top team, but they're better than some of these other sides. And I think Jill Scott does, you know, he's had a big week, got her 150th cap, returned to Everton. Her getting the winner today, looking so rejuvenated and full of life at Everton. I think that's an interesting narrative. You know, it felt like with her coaching contract at City and just everything was winding down, that maybe this was going to be her last few games for the WSL. And then kind of here she is scoring the winner for a team and a manager that really, really need a lift. And I thought that was kind of one of the things I'm taking away from this game. Anything else on the WSL, Flo, before we drop down a division? All right. So, big weekend. FA Women's Championship. We've got four matches. We have a new team at the bottom, but the same teams at the top. Charlton got a big win over Coventry, jumping them up from 11th to 9th place, putting Coventry at the bottom, winning 2-0. Goals from Jess King and Lou Hughes-Chan. Flo, in form, London City Lionesses have lost after a six-game unbeaten streak, three wins in a row. Durham keep their unbeaten streak going. Molly Roberts giving them a second-half goal, making that 1-0, keeping the pressure on top City side Leicester, who got a very, very close 1-0 win over Crystal Palace at home. Flo, that keeps them level on points, first and second, but Leicester City do have a game in hand and do look almost certain if they can kind of at least win that game in hand and get a point against Durham, then they'll be set to go up into the WSL. Leicester looking very, very good, especially because Palace have been on a really good run of form as well. And then the final game in the FA Women's Championship, Liverpool beat London Bees 3-0. Flo, you were sending me some messages about some very icky atmosphere going on at Liverpool, despite this win. You know, what's going on over there?
I mean, it's just a continuation of what was going on before the international break. Obviously, Renzola Babajide hasn't featured in the Liverpool team for a couple of months now after handing in a transfer request, not getting a move away from the Championship side. Rumours that she had offers from some WSL sides to go out on loan, but Liverpool refused. She's contracted, I think, until June 2021. And she's kind of stuck, really. She wants out. She wants to obviously play for England because she was in the camp squad in November. And yeah, things aren't looking good. And then we hear today Emma Saunders from the BBC tweeting that Rachel Furness, obviously big player for them, big player for Northern Ireland, featuring the game against England the other day, and Mel Lawley were both left out of the Liverpool squad today, not because of injury, so not looking good. And Babajide still hasn't been training with the team either. We're waiting to hear who the new manager's going to be. I think they have shortlisted now, and perhaps we'll find news of that. But yeah, just more signs of the bad situation going on over there.
Last thing I want to say on the FA Women's Championship, go follow Tom Garry, really great journalist who's good at covering this kind of thing. Go follow Since 71 blog, really good at covering the Women's National League. But there's a lot of news coming out of the Women's National League and kind of by proxy the Women's Championship about what's going to happen as they try and restart the non-pro leagues at the end of March, beginning of April. And it looks like a lot of these leagues are maybe deciding to null and void the season. It looks like there won't be relegation in from out of the Women's Championship this season. So that's good news for Coventry, Charlton, London Bees. And also there might be applications for teams that want to maybe try and go pro and get straight back into the Women's Championship out of the National League. Huddersfield Town, who are currently leading the Women's National League, we are led to believe are not applying for an application. But yeah, go follow those journalists. Go follow Since 71, who do a much better job than us in covering this kind of thing. And there's going to be a lot of news coming out of the lower divisions of women's football in England very, very soon. Flo, while we've been away, we didn't do a Wednesday episode last week, listener, just because it's been really busy, and we'll try and get those back to you when we can find the time. But there was a lot of international football kind of everywhere you looked. The She Believes Cup came and went. England played a game, Flo. It's been a long time, but there they were. What were your takeaways from around the world in women's football?
Ones to watch, no input signal. Fantastic player. Oh, I really think, you know,
they made an appearance today.
I was watching the stream and I was like, wow, back with a bang, super sub.
I'm in a toxic relationship with no input signal.
Can't
live without them.
Those of you that watched the England-Northern Ireland game will get that reference. It was a very windy day at St. George's Park and unfortunately the feed was cut a few times and it was kind of shaky Blair Witch Project cam for a lot of the game. And same again today. With the Birmingham game that's played at SGP, there was a bit of no signal input, but great times anyway. But it was interesting. I think I was intrigued by the discussion around Canada. Obviously, a lot of interested eyes because of Bev Priestman.
The wonderful Bev Priestman.
And the performance that they put in against the USA, I think people got quite excited about that. But after that performance, I didn't watch the full 90 minutes against Brazil or Argentina, but looking at the highlights, looking at the discussions on Twitter, not I don't know really what to say, because it's very early doors in Priestman's reign, and they were missing some big players.
Yeah,
but I think people were a little bit disappointed, especially the Argentina result where they won 1-0 very last minute. I think people were expecting a little bit more with some of the talent that they do play, and maybe signs of, is this Priestman reign going to be as hyped as we were hoping? Because it had been billed as the kind of like finally the dawn of Canadian women's soccer, and it's such a talented generation. I mean, what has been your thoughts around that?
I can't remember if we spoke. Have we already watched USA Canada last time we spoke? So last time we were hanging out on the pod, USA Canada has happened, and it really felt like the revolution was here.
Exactly,
and Bev Priestman
exactly.
was, going to change the world, and Canada was a new big nation around town. I think Canada remind me a bit of the Lionesses and a little bit of France as well. And I think there's been a bit of this chat, at least with a lot of the writers I know and on Twitter, where big women's football nations have a bit of a chip on their shoulder because they're not the United States. There's only really one, maybe you could include Germany and kind of in historical terms, Norway, in that kind of conversation. But there aren't many nations that have really got their act together over the past 20 years and created like quote unquote a culture. And so I think you got to give both Priestman credit for getting that USA performance out of them. But you've also, there's still a lot culturally in regards to taking your chances, playing on the front foot, these kind
Canada
of things.
Canada are bad at taking chances.
Yeah, winner's mentality. You know, we mention these things all the time and they sound like cliches, but Canada made a lot of the same mistakes they've been making for the past 10 years. And this is young players, new players, but it's hard to unwork a culture. And like I said, I think some of that's in the Lionesses too.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. And I think that's why it was so great to see that emphatic performance against Northern Ireland, because going into the Northern Ireland game, I was a little bit worried because performances under Phil Neville were extremely stale, like scraping victories, like really turgid victories, bad defeats, bad football, like it's not creating a lot of opportunities, a lot of possession, not much else. So it felt so great to watch a team where it felt like the shackles were really off. They could really play in a positive way, in fast pace. And from the very first whistle, it was about creating opportunities and chances and finishing them. And I just don't think we saw that enough under Phil Neville. He was so obsessed with possession and that side of the game that, yeah, they would still create chances, but you know, they created more chances in that first half against Northern Ireland than they've probably created in like three competitive games towards the end of Phil Neville's reign. And yes, it's only against Northern Ireland, and I get that, but that Northern Ireland team were full of confidence, qualifying for historic playoffs, good players that could have caused England a lot of problems. And England just never gave them the chance, never, really gave them the ball. And just, it was, great to watch. And the freedom of which they played with. And I think Hegarisa is going to have a great impact on them. And I hope maybe she gets to stay on board in some capacity if she doesn't get a job elsewhere, which I'm sure she will get a job somewhere else.
Yeah, the things that struck out to me in the kind of intangible area, they were good on the pitch. They were, like you said, fierce, front foot, not afraid to lose possession if it meant playing a pass with a high upside of like creating a chance. But I think what really stuck out to me was Esme Morgan's Twitter feed, if you saw it. So great. I think sometimes you talk about team unity, Esme Morgan fangirling every single player making a debut, all her mates talking about the jokes, like crying on Twitter, so excited for everyone. That really made me smile and made me think, okay, this group can roll. Ella Toon stepping up and taking a penalty on her debut. Her teammates giving her the ball to take the penalty on her debut and tucking it away. Absolutely love to see that. And Lotta Wobbenmoy coming off the bench, shouting, firing people up, telling people where
I'm
to be.
I'm such a fan of hers. Her Twitter feed is also fantastic. Make sure you follow her.
Yeah, I just thought there was a really good energy from the young players. I mean, Esme Morgan wasn't called up, but like, there's something about these young players. Ebony Salmon come off the bench. Sani McIver as well, like they just seem to be a little bit more ruthless and ready, and that just seemed really encouraging. And whether or not that's Hegarisa immediately stamping her authority on some of these players, or it's saying more about where kind of English women's football is being developed across the country in academies, although obviously Lotta Wobbenmoy and Sani McIver are kind of out of the NCAA system, But yeah, I thought that was just really, really, really encouraging to see. That was my biggest takeaway. Other kind of shout outs from the Shibelis Cup, which I watched all of. Aldana Cometti, the Argentina centre back, was working really hard, almost got a clean sheet in the second half of that USA dismantling of Argentina. She plays for Levante, who I don't really watch in the Spanish league, but I know they're second and they're doing really well, kind of behind a flawless Barcelona team. So she really stuck out as a player I'd never really watched before, who was brilliant. Obviously, Lorena Benitez's ACL injury was just heartbreaking. Big shout out to 18-year-old Jade Rose, who actually made a couple of mistakes in the Brazil loss for Canada, but looked really, really good in the Argentina game, making her debut. Is going to be going to Harvard, class of 2025. So yeah, great Canadians building up everywhere. Obviously, love my life, Nichelle Prince, absolutely slaying it. Didn't get a goal, but was working really hard in a new position. Doesn't play number nine at club level. So it was cool to see Bev Priestman experimenting with her there. Kristen Press absolutely flamed out last couple of games for the USA as well.
Yeah, fantastic.
Incredible goal, absolute trademark goal with that left foot touch, cut right side, cool, calm finish off the post. I mean, go and watch that till you do have nothing else to do. Not a phrase. Yeah, and then I guess the last thing on the United States is just like the anthem debacle we haven't really talked about. I mean, go and listen to Diaspora United. Go and listen to Meg Linehan, who I'm sure is going to cover it on her pod. Like, there's great people unpacking that. It's kind of a mess. It seems slightly menacing. And there's obviously been a lot of drama last night, Flo, which I'm sure you saw. I was kind of not really on, trying not to be online when I don't have to be online. So I kind of, and I don't really understand how the USSF AGM kind of women's
it was pretty bad
meeting going
is all I will sum it up is it was pretty
yeah
bad.
I don't really want to give any more airtime to like racist rants, but yeah, there's some kind of nasty, it feels like the USS kind of F, like a lot of institutions, like there's so much kind of BS, to use a word, to sort out. So keep an eye on that, and yeah, try and be positive, give people space.
And the Champions League on Wednesday.
Here it is.
Which is great. And this idea has just popped into my head. So, you know, feel free to veto it. We'll see we'll see the relative logistics of it. But, I mean, I feel like we should do, like, some kind of stream hangout for the Champions League, because it's at, you know, a vaguely okay time. But come back to me with that one. Maybe it's relative logistics too far. But let's chat.
See what we can get. Yeah, on the Wednesday on the Chelsea Atletico. I love the way you're throwing ideas live in the pod.
It's back to back. I think it's 4:30 and then 6:30, I think. Something like that. So they're back to back games, the City and Chelsea games. So I think the Chelsea game is probably going to be the better of the two. So it could be an evening stream hangout. See what.
And that's on BT Sport.
Yeah, BT Sport. I'm not sure if they're showing it like they did previously when they put it on the YouTube channel for free. TBC on that might do. But yeah, it's on BT Sport.
Check the Twitter for updates. American or around the world listeners, I'll try and find what I can get for you. I'm not 100% sure who's going to be showing it. I know CBS did the summer tournament, and then more recently we've just had internal team streams for stuff like that. Last thing to say before we get out of here. The Convenience have finally released the intro music. It's streaming everywhere. The song is called Kiss Me in Heaven. Play it till the cows come home. And with that, we'll leave you with the music by The Convenience for Relatively Football. Flo, have a good night. Thanks for staying up. And I'll see you on Wednesday, I guess.
Yeah, see you there.
Cheers.